This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Great privilege to enjoy these few days together, right? And I'm sure at 5 o'clock, some of you farmers are saying, when is this going to be over? Well, one more to go, and then one after that. Effective teams and business meetings for schools, churches, missions, parachurch organizations. I heard Irvin Shantz say one time, coming from Franconia area in north of Philadelphia, if there's something you don't want done, then give it to a committee or give it to a team. That was kind of the era he grew up in. So he came to Northwestern Ontario kind of as a leader and manager of what was then Northern Light Gospel Mission, which Verna and I joined in 1965. They would have been there approximately 12, 14 years before that. But I think one of my greatest experiences in ministry were with Northern Youth Programs, starting in 1972. Effective teams, business meetings are crucial to success of and challenges of a church, Christian school, or a ministry. This presentation will reflect on the dynamics that can potentially produce positive outcomes of meetings versus negative outcomes. And I'm sure some of you sitting here saying, yes, I've seen both. Times when there was great success and times when it just wasn't working real well. Before we take a look at some tips, here's some points on to remember when participating in a team. And number one, be committed to whole communication. You know, communication is definitely a key to success of meetings. And here's something I stumbled on over the years. Three things that are extremely important when communication is used: sharing what you think, your thoughts, sharing what you feel, and this gets quite tricky, and even the last one gets a little more tricky: what you need. What you think, feel, and need. Doesn't matter where you are on the team, but if you're leading a team, what is the need of the team? If you're going to have successful communication, you need to be able to share what you think, feel, and need. Another element is number two there, an awareness of three C's: character, competence, and chemistry. And character has its own base here: honesty, teachability, humility, reliability, a healthy work ethic, and a willingness to be entreated. Some of you are saying, well, I've led meetings where character was lacking or things got a bit awash. Competence, administrative gifts, contented and happy. Contented in your role, and my role is leading a team, and a sense of joy in doing it. Maybe that's a better word there, joy. Someone was just asking me, even yesterday and today at lunchtime. How do we find new leaders? Administrative gifts. And my experience in finding new leaders and replacing leaders, you know, there's sometimes a board would tell you as a CEO or as a leader, we need to find a new leader, or you're determined to find a new leader and you get the board's blessing, or you're given a responsibility to find a leader. How do you do it? I'd like to open some discussion after we, before we get into the tips here on, after we look at some of these things from Nehemiah. But finding new leaders. In my case, in the last 10 years, in the process of finding a new leader, I got a list of about 12 men and started going through the list. And I'm sure some of you have been in those kind of places too. As a pastor, you're trying to replace yourself or replace teammates. So how do you find these three C's? Chemistry. What do people feel in my presence? How do I fit relationally? Do I have a positive effect when I meet people? And we're not necessarily looking at a superhuman here. We're just saying, what is your impact? What is my impact? What is the chemistry of how you relate or don't relate to those around you? No. You say, well, that's got a problem because this character competence chemistry doesn't always work out the way it was intended. So I'd like to come back for some discussion on number one and two. But before we do that, I'd like to share a bit of a reflection from Nehemiah, and if you happen to have a Bible with you, we're not reading through Nehemiah, but we, in Nehemiah, it's quite an example of what he did to lead a team, to deal with the challenges that go with team leadership. And if you're getting a hold of leadership books, one of the books that I got a hold of some years ago is a study on Nehemiah. And you may want to check it online or look in your bookstore for the some illustrations from Nehemiah. In Nehemiah chapter 1, Nehemiah's burden and prayer helped him reduce the problem to manageable size, gave a new perspective, led him to reorder his priorities, and gave him a sense of purpose. So we see in Nehemiah chapter 1, Nehemiah heard what was happening in Israel from Babylon as he was serving the king or the leadership in Babylon. And he heard reports from some of the remnant. Verse 4 in Nehemiah chapter 1, when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. As a leader, how many times have you sat down or we sat down and said, this is painful. We sit and mourn. Then I fasted and praying before the God of heaven. And then it goes through how he went about praying, because the Lord must have given him a call to do something about it. But he had these challenges. And can I reduce the leadership challenges, the burden of my leadership, your leadership, to a manageable size? and give it a new perspective. Reordering priorities and a sense of purpose. In Nehemiah chapter 2, as a leader, Nehemiah understood human nature. How aware are we as leaders and leading and chairing meetings of the human nature in our team? He loved people, knew how to approach people, knew how to organize a team, and requested their resources and cooperation. Nehemiah understood the dynamics of responsibility, power, and authority. He was a task specialist and a relationship expert. Amazing. Would you and I have that kind of quality? He was not afraid of internal or external opposition, and as we read through the story of Nehemiah, he got it from both ends. Opposition from inside and outside. Nehemiah went through all this. He got the cooperation of the king and signed letters in verse 8 of chapter 2 and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest. And he had his request in verse 7, if it please the king, let letters be given me for the governors of the province beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah. So he did his homework. Much of our leading and chairing meetings requires homework. Requires this passion of all this stuff. Verses 9 and 10 in chapter 2. Then I came to the governors of the province beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen. When Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the Ammonite officials, heard about it, it was very displeasing to them that someone had come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel. So he had his internal and external opposition, as we'll see, as you see in the following pages. When you read through Nehemiah. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 10 to 19, we see that his dealing with opposition, Nehemiah's motives were called into question. So this Shemaiah wanted to meet inside the temple, which was not something a normal Jew should do unless he's a Levite or a priest. In verse 11, but I said, should a man like me flee, and could one such as I go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. So he had done his homework about what it understood, what his role and authority were. Power, authority, and control. Verse 12, and then I perceived that surely God had not sent him. Excuse me. But he uttered his prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. So you may, in some leadership role, actually have people sometimes hired to put you out or get you down. But Nehemiah dealt with opposition. His motives were called into question. This is a very powerful form of attack. Strength is gained by overcoming adversity, not by giving into it. Nehemiah knew how to rebuke, encourage, and motivate people, and inspired people to their best effort. And you see that in verse 15. He completed the project that he went to do in, 55 days? Or no, 52 days. And then there's a success stories from verses 15 to 19. The rest of Nehemiah, and you read between the lines, just like Ezra, there's lots of names and details. But Nehemiah chapter 9 to 13, a focus on, again on prayer and clear dependence on God. Sound doctrine and theology is the foundation for effectiveness in the future. Scriptural authority is very important in all matters of faith and practice. As a people, we need to join the company of the committed. Nehemiah acted decisively in order to assure success and preserve freedoms. Leaders need to be people of conviction. And Nehemiah, Ezra, you read through some of these pages from chapter 8, 9, 10, all the way to chapter 13. Let me read a couple of verses here in chapter 8, verse 6. Then Ezra blessed the Lord, the God of the great God, and all the people answered, amen and amen, while lifting up their hands. Then they bowed low and worshiped the Lord with their faces to the ground. So there's a return to godliness led by Nehemiah and what he was attempting to do. There was a lot of grieving in chapter 8, verses 9 to 12. And he came along and said, the leader said, the joy of the Lord is your strength. And all the people went away to eat and drink, in verse 12, and sent portions to celebrate the great festival because they understood the words which had been made known to them. So there's a clear reading of the word. They're gaining insight. The great rejoicing. And in chapter 9, there's this confession of sins. They read the book. Verse 3, while they stood in their place, they read from the book of the law of the Lord, their God, the fourth of the day, and for another fourth they confessed and worshiped the Lord their God. And then there's this great prayer in chapter 9. Excuse me. Chapter 9, verses 5, right through to the end of that chapter. So again, we see how Nehemiah and Ezra brought the people back to godliness. They should not neglect the house of God. They made oath to walk in God's laws. In chapter 12, and on that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced because the God of heaven, the God had given them great joy. Even the women and children rejoiced so that the joy of Jerusalem was heard from afar. So leaders in verse 46, leaders of the singers, songs of praise and hymns of thanksgiving. Nehemiah is quite an example. Now, I'd like to open it for some comments or questions or testimonies of what you've done in leading and chairing meetings that can produce some of the things from 1, 2, and 3 and some of Nehemiah's example here. What has been some of your experiences in leading school board meetings, pastoral meetings, Earl, I'll pick on you a little bit. Sometimes church meetings, pastoral meetings, are only held Sunday mornings. Can you give us an example of what you do with your pastoral team?
That's not the right time to do business. We have a monthly ministers meeting with three churches in the district each. So it ends up being three meetings just for that meeting, but it's worth the trip. Sunday morning, somebody's thinking about preaching, and it's just not the time. You won't get the best out of your people.
I was hoping you'd say that.
It's not fair. It's not fair to the brother that has a message, for sure. And it generally doesn't get documented well. Occasionally, we may have something that, well, we did that Sunday morning, you remember, and you get in trouble. And so you have your organized meetings, you have documented what was said and what was done and wasn't done, and any one of our members can read, the team that's meeting, can read that, and, oh, yeah, that's right, I'm committed to do this part. And the minutes are so a must, because as a chairman and SMBI and even in ministry, church, you have to have a good secretary that documents what's being said. And already the setting where the secretary, and this just wasn't his cup of tea, he called me out, what did we decide there? And when I'm chairing a meeting, I don't want to be thinking of recording. And good secretaries, you just don't have to worry about that. It's taken care of. And later on, when that comes through, and those minutes then should be out in the hands within a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, you can mark, that's when you ought to approve the minutes from the week month before. Fresh in your mind, you read it, and I always put on those minutes the date 3 days after the meeting. Whenever I get it, I read over it and make the corrections then, because it's fresh in my mind.
Great.
So I don't know, it's just a few little birds that I think are very important.
Any other testimonies, examples, challenges you face recently in meetings?
One of the other things is the meetings must be productive, and I think you come with some of your tips here, you come into that, but
yeah.
You got to make them productive. And it's a meeting like that can be just like a public auction. When in our area, public auction, the auctioneer that drags and drags and drags, but the auctioneer that starts the first couple items and knocks them off, people will pay attention. And the person that will sit up and come at it, you don't have to sit there long and wait for answer, comments. And I think you can call out people, call names on what their response is.
When should the chairman voice his opinion, or should they never?
Ah. Any feedback? I have an opinion on it, but what if you're leading a team of 6 or 8 or 10, and you've got vocal people in there, two people kind of dominating the whole thing? And back to his question, should the chairman? My opinion, I think you should listen to the others and see if you can team up with some of the thoughts you hear, and then you say, well, that's crazy. You should say right up front what you're thinking, the way this thing should go. But I think it's better if you get the team dialoguing, discussing, talking. Go ahead.
Yes, we have the example from Acts 15 of James doing that. After however long they talked and debated, he spoke up then and pulled things together.
They came to a collective conclusion. That's good. Well, let's take, with the time we have left, let's take a look at the tips, and then maybe we can come back to some of these other points here on the communication style, the three C's, and any lessons we have learned. A list of tips that I've learned and gained before the meeting, especially if it's been a difficult meeting, and many meetings can be difficult, be prepared by reading over the previous meeting notes and minutes. Lead by example, like you come prepared. To establish an agenda, you can prepare the first draft of the previous agenda off the previous agenda, notes and minutes. Three, prepare a progress report, especially the previous meetings. Meetings have been challenging and difficult. Four, get the documents together and email them or get them to your people and somehow include the new draft agenda in a previous meeting. Ask for additional agenda items to be forwarded to you by a specific date and time. Send a reminder, email the day before the meeting with clear instructions, expectations, include the date, time, beginning and ending, time and place where a meeting began and end on time. I've been to meetings that you already know when you look at the agenda, this is going to be an hour longer, or this meeting will be going on for quite a long time. So find a way to get your meetings and your agenda in the time slot as best you can. Now, you can't always predict, but I've been in meetings in mission organizations. The one thing that happened to me, early 90s, we were planning to be in southern Ontario from northwestern Ontario, 1,000 miles away, for a year and 9 months. And I told the Lord, I hadn't even told Verna, I don't think. Been involved in leadership in a mission, I wouldn't mind experiencing or getting a taste of leadership in a local church. And I got more than a taste. I got a big mouthful. Got to this local church in southern Ontario, and pastor had experienced burnout, and a previous pastor that had been ordained was silenced because of lack of integrity with his finances. So they not only asked me to be involved in the preaching, they somehow wondered if I could help pull this thing back together. And the meetings, we had our meetings during the day. Well, these church meetings, they start at 8 o'clock in the evening and go till midnight. And so how do you restructure? Obviously, you couldn't, the pastoral team is employed, so you can't meet during the day, or you can't tie up all the Saturdays. So how do you go about doing this? Number six here, after the agenda had been circulated, be reluctant to change it. New agenda items can be placed onto a future meeting. Arrive early and prepare for meetings. And during the meeting, stick to the agenda and follow it in the order presented. Keep the agenda in front of you at all times. Use it as a step-by-step guide to the issues that need to be addressed. 10, allow one speaker at a time. Do not allow people to talk over one another. If it happens, put up your hand as a stop. Stop, folks. Positioning, stating to let the current speaker finish, then you talk. 11, make sure everyone is heard. loud, opinionated extroverts may attempt to dominate the meeting, while introverts get even quieter. Going around the table one by one can help each person give their comments. 12, if projects have been assigned at previous meetings, give everyone a time to report on the project. This holds individuals responsible and accountable. 13, pursue finding unified solutions to problems. However, keep the conflict above ground. Conflict that goes underground poisons the soil and hurts everyone eventually. Expect disagreement, even forceful disagreement. Sometimes, especially if we're tempted to keep the peace at any cost, sometimes that's not a good idea. Even forceful agreement. True biblical unity is worked out in community and does not mean the absence of conflict. It's the presence of a loving, reconciling spirit. Conflict within community is better than a mask of unity. 14, don't let the meeting become chaotic. There may be attempts to hijack or derail the meeting. Hijack is when someone other than the chair takes control of the situation. Derail is when someone tries to divert away from the agenda. As a chair, it's your job to keep the meeting on track, keep organized, and maintain control. Allow for some humor rather than a major distraction. A sense of humor can add some lightness to a heavy meeting and help it to be productive. Conclude by reviewing the details of the next meeting date. Express appreciation for everyone's attendance and contribution. Finish on time and table items for the next meeting that have not been covered. After the meeting, within 3 days, follow up by sending an email on your action plan. This sets the tone that we are accountable and what we say we're going to do. Within the same amount of time, send a thank you note to each participant, thanking them for specific contribution to the meeting. And then the conclusion, these steps may not ensure a perfect meeting, however, they can set the tone for improved and productive meetings. Expectations can be clear from the start that things move ahead on an orderly way and that each person's contributions are valued. Now, back to our open, we got about 10 minutes. Comments, questions? Dan.
One way you can save a lot of time and gain efficiency is by using subcommittees.
Okay.
All personnel items go to the personnel committee. All facilities issues, and then they do the work of that needs to be done on the issue instead of the whole board doing that, and you can gain a lot of efficiencies. I saw meetings that were used, typically would run till midnight or later. Board members be on the way home by 9 o'clock. I make it sound like a panacea. It doesn't solve everything.
Yeah. It's one way. We recently restructured our organization where there's quite a few subcommittees. What are some tips? You've learned, or you could add to this list of tips.
Probably more of a question. If the agenda is longer than the time, is it better to go over time or to table items?
Well, give me a bit of a context. As a church meeting, school board meeting, or pastoral meeting?
I am chairman on children's ministry.
So it's an organizational. And people local, or are they off scattered all over the county or all over The state?
The board members?
Yeah.
Local.
Go ahead.
One of the things that that someone told me one time is that he was talking in the context, I think, of school board meetings. But he said either there's nothing or there's very little productive that happens after 10 o'clock at night. And I just, that stuck to me, and I think there's something to it.
On our team, the board chairman asked permission if we need to go past closing time. And if people got to get going, then we reserve it for the next meeting. If people can stay an extra 15 minutes to resolve a few things, then we move on with that and stay within that time frame.
It's a great rate for a chair to respect other people's time and energy. I've been to board meetings where they've gotten so used to certain members, if this is the closing time, they're up and out of there without even saying anything. Quite chaotic. Bored, obviously.
If you use a men's meeting for an example, and you have the ones that talking or ideas come easy, and then there's the quiet ones, how do you balance it where you get the input from those that don't really talk, even if you go around the table much, with the ones that are the talkers, and they think, well, they're the ones that are always railroading in the ideas and get accepted.
Any comments how to go about that? Like here it suggests going around the circle. Now, I've found already, even in fairly good meetings, it's the vocal ones that do the talking, and the rest kind of, you know, they got on board, but they haven't said anything. Is that a good meeting? I don't think that's the best kind of meeting.
I always believed it's okay to call a person out. Is that okay?
Well, here it's
all right, going around is okay, but when you have those two silent partners, kind of call them out.
Yeah.
As a board chairman, it's their responsibility to respect and protect those quiet person's opinions. Because if they always get railroaded or it's a dumb idea, of course they're not going to speak. So their opinions have to be respected even if they are not moved ahead with.
I appreciate the perspective of our chairman as he reminded us all that for each vessel that the Holy Spirit is dwelling within, and we have a responsibility to share. You know, that for me, that comes harder. I'd just be willing to sit in a meeting and listen there.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's others that will just speak. And so the responsibility is the same for both, that we need to share what the Holy Spirit is laying in our hearts. But some need to limit, and some need to stretch.
Yeah. Is it okay, the vocal person, is it okay that we might even call them out privately and say, hey, can you find a way to tone things down a bit? Not to squelch your ideas and your opinions, but can you come to the next meeting toned down? Oh, any other comments on your question here?
Well, I was thinking, in a small way, it might tie into the other brother when he said, when should a chairman vote? It seems like, as a chairman, you have a lot of opportunity to sway the meeting one way or the other, depending on how you handle the input.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you need to be in favor of the quiet one, or personally ask them for advice to sort of balance things out, and then how you bring things to conclusion is a pretty big responsibility. But sometimes that's when we can share our comment or in sort of our vote to keep things moving forward.
Right. Clinton, any comments on how quick a chair should give his opinion? Like, we're frequently called to, go over the agenda and introduce the subject. So even the tone of our voice as we introduce it, or you know, the way we go about it is quite significant. We got 5 minutes.
You read a lot in people's expressions too, and often even a quieter person has an opinion, and sometimes it's not real strong, but you can often read when somebody has something they want to say, or if the gears aren't working, and especially if this is a quiet or even keel person, and the conversations or discussions can get, at least some of the meetings I've been in, can get pretty emotionally involved.
Oh.
And sometimes it's a good idea not just to get that person's opinion for the sake of having their opinion, but it can have a calming effect to say, you know what, it looks to me like you're thinking something. You mind sharing some input here? And having a calmer voice take his time and slowly, deliberately present something can just settle things down a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm. Some of us are quick thinkers, you know. We got it on the top of our head, and how come the rest of you don't get it? And the rest of, you know, some of the rest of us are saying, maybe tomorrow morning I'll have an opinion. So, how do we go about that? Well, I don't know if this handout, you can take it with you, deliberate with your team, suggest you find ways to lead and manage meetings that are refreshing and upbuilding. I've been to meetings where you go out of there totally refreshed, just like this has not been a draggy meeting and not been a meeting that's led nowhere. And then I've been to the other kind of meetings too. So have fun. We do need new leaders, and find new leaders. Train new leaders. Mentor new leaders. Go ahead.
I have one comment that I found helpful. I think it's a good idea for the chair, and if you're just a member of the committee, to occasionally review Robert's Rules of Order. Even though your board may not be sticking by it, I think it helps. There's a book available, Robert's Rules of Order for Dummies. There's a book for dummies on most subjects. It's a pretty good resource, and I think it's helpful just to occasionally read it. It's pretty dull and dusty reading, but it can help.
Take it from a veteran, Dan here. He knows all about that. Thanks.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.